That shake.
Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program, if we can get the sound levels right here. Oh, I love this equipment. What a day, huh? What a day. a hearing conducted by one of the crazier people in the U.S. House is Daryl Issa from California, who happens to be, by the way, the richest multi-millionaire, possibly billionaire. He's the one that, I guess, invented or had the franchise on LoJack, the car theft thing. This is after he was charged with car theft. So he has a hearing. You know all this by now. He has a hearing on contraception. A hearing on contraception for women. Was the hearing about condoms? No. It doesn't have any women testify. I looked at the picture. There are five guys sitting there. One is wearing a yarmulke. One has a backward collar, maybe two of them, as Catholic priests. So you right away, you know, you got a Catholic and two Jews. The other two guys, sounds like the opening line to a joke. You know, two Catholics, a Jew, and two other people walk into a house hearing. First one says, why are we here? Second one says, oh, this is about birth control. The first one says, where are the chicks? The second one says, that's the point. Jesus Christ, where do we live? Where do we live? Where do we live? Oh, my God.
Celibate men deciding what I can do with my ovaries.
I've already made that decision for you, right? Just kidding. Oh, my God, just kidding. Well, those are the two priests. We don't know about the Jew and the two other guys. The two other guys, I don't know. They look like witch burners to me. I have no idea.
I think my favorite was when one of the panelists, maybe it was Issa himself, said that the woman who was in the audience who was ready to testify, I love this, wasn't qualified to speak on the subject. She didn't have the same qualifications as these men did about how women should be able to use contraceptives.
Play that bit. We have some sound for you. This is later on today on Andrea Mitchell's program on MSNBC. I know you've heard this 1,000 times today, too. But all the major Republican candidates now have a billionaire backer. This is getting down to a battle between the 0.00063 of the American population. That's 6,300,000ths of 1%. This is a fight between billionaires to see who's going to be the Republican nominee. Rick Santorum has a billionaire. His name is Freeze something. He was interviewed by Andrea Mitchell. We'll just cut right to the chase on this interview.
This contraceptive thing, my gosh, it's such inexpensive. You know, back in my days, they used bare aspirin for contraceptives. The gals put it between their knees, and it wasn't that costly.
Excuse me, I'm just trying to catch my breath from that, Mr. Freeze, frankly.
I mean, think about this. I mean, this is astonishing. Who the hell are these people? And Kathy in Maine writes, Mike, personally, I'm sick to death of the patriarchal, misogynistic voyeurism and blatant hypocrisy of the Bishop Pharaohs and the Republican bully thugs that continue to push for total control of every woman's life through domination of the uterus and the bedroom. Every damn day, it's another assault on the privacy of women and our bodies. To think that the morality of contraception is being discussed by a bunch of sick, twisted men in a congressional hearing makes me nuts! Add to that a man actually saying that an aspirin held between the woman's knees is an inexpensive form of conception, contraception. Oh, my God! Is there some place we can put all these freaking wingnuts? Not one good thing can ever come of this ever-growing union of religious wackos and government thugs. Kathy in Maine. Now, I have a typewritten page in front of me, so I don't know if she was screaming, but I think she was. Oh, my God. This is just... But everybody should pay close attention. Do you understand? Women! Women, listen! You women who think you're Republican or think you're evangelical Christian, are you crazy? Are you mad? Are you insane? Can't you worship your God without having a man's nose in your vagina? Well, I don't know. Maybe that's not such a bad idea. But not the way they mean it. Oh! Oh, and something else. Where is it? Where is it? Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. You ready? This is a little strong. Virginia is poised to send two of the most abhorrent anti-choice bills to Governor Bob McDonnell to sign. The governor has indicated he will sign at least one, if not both. The first requires the use of transvaginal ultrasound prior to a woman obtaining an abortion. Transvaginal ultrasound. Do you know what that is? I have to tell you, I did not. I do. Oh, of course you would, Kathy. In fact, with all the children I've had, now a couple of grandchildren, I have never heard the term transvaginal. According to the Guttmacher Institute, 88% of abortions occur during the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. Because the fetus is so small at this stage, traditional ultrasounds performed through the abdominal wall, the jelly on the belly thing, often cannot produce a clear image. Therefore, a transvaginal probe is most often necessary, especially up to 10 to 12 weeks of pregnancy. The probe is inserted into the vagina, sending sound waves to reflect off body structures to produce an image of the fetus. Under this new law, a woman's vagina will be penetrated without an opportunity for her to refuse due to coercion from the so-called public servants who passed and signed this bill into law. Now, folks, correct me if I'm wrong. This is state-sanctioned rape. State-sanctioned rape with a metal object. Whether the woman wants it or not. God damn it, when is this going to stop? When's it going to stop? Why are there not 10 million women in the streets now? Now, tonight, in the dark, screaming? Are you kidding me? State-sanctioned probe of a woman's vagina against her permission, against her will. Spread your legs. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? No. This is going to be a law. Virginia, Texas, and Iowa. Iowa! The other one going before the governor of Virginia is the Egg as Person bill. Not only will this bill outlaw abortion, but also forms of hormonal birth control. Now, I can sit here and rant and rave until I have a goddamn stroke. Where are you women? What are you doing? Are you going to let this happen?
I'm with the God Squad. I'll tell you what. Jesus Christ is going to kick your butt. I'm with the God Squad. Biology, you'll learn all you need to learn at my ministry. And pay no attention to the slanderous lies. I never had my hand between that young boy's thighs. I'm with the God Squad, so listen good. Hear my battle cry down in Hollywood.
That the thrill of romance can be heavenly dream. I'll go to bed.
You don't own me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own.
The hour. I'm sorry, I lost my mind there for a moment. It's just incredible. This political party, the Republicans. I mean, look, I've already stated my case about these two political parties, but if you're going to stay home and not vote this year, you may want to rethink at least the legislative branch. I mean, this is the Republicans are just, I don't have the vocabulary for it. And besides, your imagination is much more vast than my vocabulary. But good Lord, state sanctioned rape, forced transvaginal ultrasounds. And it's not just Virginia, it's also Texas and Iowa. Here is the definition of rape in the Virginia Code. If any person has sexual intercourse with a complaining witness, whether or not his or her spouse, or causes a complaining witness, whether or not his or her spouse, to engage in sexual intercourse with any other person, and such act is accomplished, one, against the complaining witness's will by force, threat, or intimidation, or against the complaining witness of another person, or two, through the use of the complaining witness's mental incapacity or physical helplessness, or three, with a child under age 13 as the victim, he or she shall be guilty of rape. So, the person who wrote this article, Andy Kopsa, called and emailed Virginia governor's press secretary asking if the forced vaginal ultrasound bill would in fact overturn the rape statute. The press secretary did not return the writer's call. It's pretty astounding the level that the political discourse in this country has dropped to. And I'm serious. Any woman who even considers voting for a Republican, you are so psychologically beaten down that you don't even control your own mind anymore. You really are. And that's understandable in this society. And it's understandable if you're married to a right-winger, or if you're a Catholic, or if you're an Orthodox Jew, or if you are a fundamentalist Protestant. It's understandable how you have been beaten to the point, psychologically beaten to the point, where you will go vote for someone who will have the right to insert a probe into your vagina and take a look-see if you ever find yourself in the position of wanting an abortion for any reason. And you will vote for a man, Santorum, for president, who has stated categorically and on the record that he is against and would do anything to stop birth control. Because Rick Santorum, a lot of men understand one very essential fact. As long as women have access to birth control, they can screw like little bunnies and nobody will ever know, especially not the men who think they own them. If there's no birth control, there's always a chance that some other man's, let's call it, footprint will be left at the scene of the crime. Right? Therefore, to fundamentalists, birth control is off the table. Too much freedom! Too much freedom! How do I know you're not taking birth control pills and screwing the milkman? So, the alternative, transvaginal ultrasound with a metal probe. Lay down, woman. Spread your legs. Astonishing. Astonishing. All right. That's graphic enough. I'm sure I have a lot of listeners out there who are saying, Jesus God, that's enough, Malloy. Okay. What is worse, my talking about it or this passing into law in three states? What's worse? What do you think is worse? Can I see a show of hands? We'll be back.
Persistence, you wore down my resistance. I fell, and it was swell.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. If you got some moment with Bob music, unbeknownst to me today, Bob Alexander, from the safe confines of Vancouver, B.C., slipped a moment with Bob into the email here. Sneaky devil! And I think I need to do this right now before I really, truly have a complete stroke, a complete chaotic moment here. It's time for another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends and your friends too at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's episode is titled "That Don't Make No Sense." Hey, Mike, the phrase "That Don't Make No Sense" from the Coen Brothers movie "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou" comes to mind every single time I read news from the United States. For example, Amnesty International says it's time for stricter controls on taser use. Quote from Crooks and Liars. According to data collected by Amnesty International, at least 500 people in the United States have died since 2001 after being shocked with tasers, either during their arrest or while in jail. Quote, among the cases reviewed, 90% of those who died were unarmed. Many of the victims were subjected to multiple shocks. End quote, Amnesty. When a cop shoots an unarmed person and they die on the spot or later in the hospital, that's bad. But if a cop zaps somebody with a taser and the zappie dies on the spot or later in his cell, it's an oopsie?
Sorry, honey, I forgot.
Where are the investigations? 500 people killed by cops is a headline. When cops kill 500 people, 90% of them unarmed, it means the Firesign Theater was correct when they said on one of their albums, "Help! It's the police!" In other news, from police state to crazy Catholic capers, let me see if I've got this straight. The Catholic Church elite went bananas recently because under Obamacare, they have to pony up the dough if women in their employ want birth control pills. Obama neatly sidestepped the issue by saying insurance companies will foot the bill because pills are cheaper than paying for delivering babies. Catholic employers are out of the loop. They won't be forced into an occasion of sin by providing contraceptives. End of story? Nope. Fox News brought on Father Jonathan Morris, premium member of the Legion of Christ, who said the clergy should be, quote, ready to die, end quote, to fight President Obama's mandate that health insurers cover birth control. The Legion of Christ is a Roman Catholic right-wing sect founded in Mexico in 1941 by Marcial Maciel, who was its general director until 2005. The Vatican denounced Maciel following revelations that he was an equal opportunity monster who sexually abused numerous underage seminarians and fathered at least three children with two women. The, quote, the Vatican, very serious and objectively immoral acts of Maciel were confirmed by incontrovertible testimonies and represented true crimes and manifest a life without scruples or authentic religious sentiment, the Vatican said. The Vatican also stated that the Legion, quote, created a mechanism of defense around Maciel, shielding him from accusations and suppressing damaging witnesses from reporting abuse, end quote, the Vatican. Let's pause here for a moment. The Vatican has protected pedophile priests for, oh, I don't know, hundreds of years. So just how unspeakably evil does someone have to be to get denounced by the church? Father Jonathan Morris was an advisor on the Mel Gibson Jesus snuff film, The Passion of the Christ, and joined Fox as a general news contributor in 2005. He said to Liz Cheney, who was filling in for Sean Hannity,
"We recognize it goes against the conscience to kill. The president is saying, you know what, don't worry about it. You don't have to kill that person anymore. We're just going to make sure you pay somebody else to do the bidding for you, to kill that person for you." That's an analogy, but that's exactly what it is.
If a night manager of a convenience store said something like that, I'd pay for my cheese puffs and get the hell out of there as fast as I could. But when a Legion of Christ member, a sect created by a sex criminal, lectures Americans on birth control with the daughter of Satan on national television, the mind reels and then bursts into flame. We've been living in Canada for about 7 months. There are serious environmental and social issues on the table up here. The conservative government led by Stephen Harper is as scary as any group of conservatives anywhere, but there is no nationally televised crazy up here, not even a little bit. Starting 25 miles south of where I'm typing this, that's the border, you know, crazy is institutionalized. The familiar has become normal, and the normal is crazy. Have you ever watched a Fox News program from start to finish? I can't. I tried a couple of times to watch Bill O'Reilly or Glenn Beck when he was on, but I could never make it to the first commercial break. It hurt my head too much. 10 minutes of Fox, and I'm yelling at my television in pain and outrage. I used to work at a cable television company in Los Angeles. The public access channel pumped out some of the weirdest programs imaginable, but it was okay because the only people who watched them were the people who produced the weirdness in the first place. The crazy, in other words, was contained. But Fox and their mouthpieces aren't broadcasting their gibberish on public access channels or shortwave radio stations from some garage. They're mainlining crazy directly into Americans' brains. 16 years of Fox and 24 years of Rush Limbaugh have turned millions of Americans into people who literally don't know right from wrong. Literally. So forget E Pluribus Unum. I suggest we go with Non Compos Mentis. It'll come in handy in case there's ever a trial. Regards, Bob. Another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. It's just insane. Oh, and by the way, over at Crooks and Liars, Bob also sent me a little piece there. He said, every time Romney comes down to Earth from Planet Rich People, he gives away his alien roots. This is on Crooks and Liars. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney suggested to a group of business people in Michigan today that entrepreneurs should ask their parents for money instead of using loans from the federal government. Jesus. In a speech to the Greater Farmington Area Chamber of Commerce, the former governor blasted the Obama administration for trying to jumpstart renewable energy with government loans to companies like Solyndra. He said, quote, when the president says, I'm going to take your money and give it to Tesla and Fisker, two new car companies, which, by the way, Fisker now builds their cars in Finland, that's not good. When he takes $500 million and puts it into Solyndra, that's not good. That's not good for American enterprise and innovation. The president wanted to encourage solar energy, and he thought by taking $500 million and giving it as a loan to a company would do that. It's just the opposite. Not understanding the private enterprise system explains why he doesn't understand that. Because my guess is that there are about 100 more entrepreneurs in America that have ideas for solar energy, and they're trying to go out and get funding for their business, for their startup, for their ideas, going to venture capitalists and angels and their parents to try and get funding. End quote. Although the Obama administration did approve funds for Solyndra, the loan process began under President George W. Bush's administration. Go to your parents. Well, of course. Absolutely. Isn't everybody's parents multimillionaires? Of course, my dad's dead. I think my mother is, too. But they had a lot of money. They really did. They had a lot of money. And I love it here in Michigan. You know, I like the lakes, the Great Lakes, but also like the little lakes, the not Great Lakes too. You know, I think everything's great here in Michigan. I like cars. I've always liked cars. I've liked cars since I was a kid. When I was a little kid, you know, my dad used to drive us around in a car. And, as far as what I said about letting the car industry die, well, you know, we used to ride around in cars. We used to go to the Detroit Auto Show all the time. And it was really cool. I really liked that. Do you like my jeans? Some people say these are mom jeans. Is that what they're called? Are they called that? Yeah, I guess they are called mom jeans. I don't know what that means. But listen, I love Michigan. I like your lakes. And I like your trees. You know how I like your trees here in Michigan? They're just the right height. They're just the right height for Michigan trees.
Let's give them something to talk about. need your love.
Ready for action, nip it in the bud, we never relaxing. Outcast is everlasting, not clashing, not at all.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
The top of the next hour, we will have a report from Prairie 2. Do you have that sound, the aspirin sound, handy again? What's her name? Andrea Mitchell just about lost it. You have that?
This contraceptive thing, my gosh, it's such inexpensive. You know, back in my days, they used bare aspirin for contraceptives. The gals put it between their knees, and it wasn't that costly.
Excuse me, I'm just trying to catch my breath from that, Mr. Freeze, frankly.
Yes, I'm a bitch. Did you like that, Andrea? My God. That's Rick Santorum's angel. Lee in New York City writes, Mike, I wanted to send this yesterday, but I was distracted. If religious belief can decide the health care a person can get, what if that decision is made by, say, a Jehovah's Witness? You know, the people who believe that healing comes only from God. If you're sick, pray. If you're dying, pray harder. What if your employer is not a follower of the Pope, but a devout Jehovah's Witness? Any doctor's visit or hospital stay is not covered. Of course, this is the Republican business owner's dream. No cost health care because it offends you. Keep it lit, but don't burn yourself. It's not covered. Lee, in New York City. Yeah, the Christian Science, the First Church of Christ Scientists. There's one not too far from the farmer's market we go to, and... I have nothing against Christian Scientists, nothing at all. Live long and prosper, you know? But, the whole thing is just so over the top. I'm lost every night to find the words to express some of this stuff. That's why I have this deep-seated envy of the people on current TV, because they have this television as a forum to express their outrage, and they can use sound clips and video, and then their heads don't explode. And we're kind of stuck here in Radio Land. Well, and can't show you the videos. The videos are great. We got to figure out a way out of this, Kathy. We really do. Something other than sitting in this tacky little studio. You know? You ever heard of the AmeriCorps program, the AmeriCorps service program? The Corporation for National and Community Service is the overarching title of that. They just announced that they received a record-breaking 582,000 applications to serve in AmeriCorps this past year. That's a lot of young people raising their hands to serve. That's 50,000 more applications than last year. Now, granted, there's not a lot of jobs out there, but unfortunately, the overwhelming majority, 86% of these kids, these young people, are not kids, are being turned away. Nearly a million AmeriCorps applications have been denied in the past 2 years alone. Why? Because the Republicans have defunded AmeriCorps. What was it? Was it the psychopathic jackass from Alaska that said AmeriCorps was some kind of a Nazi youth idea or communist youth idea put together by Obama? It has nothing to do with Obama? So the people who are volunteering, hundreds of thousands of young Americans who are volunteering to go into communities and tutor kids or do cleanup or work in libraries or, God forbid, restore churches or clean up filthy lots with broken glass and junk and needles and, you know, people who are volunteering, and the Republicans give it all the finger. And the Republicans say, no, you're not going to do that. We want America to tumble into utter chaos. Well, it's coming, you sons of bitches. It really is coming. I'm telling you, it's going to come. It's going to come. You people keep doing this. Just keep doing it. In the meantime, go ahead and gin up your war fever. And, oh, by the way, we'll try to get to that next hour, too. All of a sudden, what? No war? No war? What? Yeah, did you hear about that? I'll tell you about that when we come back. But a million applications, a million young people wanting to do good in this country, and they're being told, no, sorry, go away. We, you know, it's just a joke. This is the United States of America. We don't want people helping here. The Republicans don't want anybody doing anything good. We're just going to screw these women into the ground. We're going to take away their rights of privacy. We're going to insert probes into their vaginas. And we're going to guffaw and laugh about birth control and say, ha, ha, well, when I was young, we just used an aspirin. You put it between your knees and keep your knees together. Ha, 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 ha. God damn. You know, that was funny then, and all of a sudden it's funnier now. Ha, 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 ha. Want to see my money? Ha, ooh. We'll be back.
I'm a salesman.
Seven past the hour. Larry O'Donnell on Last Word on MSNBC is interviewing this Foster Freese. Is that his name? Freak. We're going to see if we can bring up some of the audio. Just to, I don't know what they're talking about, but think we can do that? Okay, let's see what happens here when we move the spit and string and the bailing wire that keeps everything together. Let's see what happens. Do-do-do. Here we go. Foster Freese, chief donor to the Santorum Super PAC.
Can you talk to Rick Santorum about that today?
Yeah, now if we can bring it up my headphones, we're all set.
It's time you talk to Rick Santorum.
Oh, it's been probably maybe 5 days a week.
And do you talk to him frequently?
No. They're so excited and geared up, and they're working very hard to create this idea of a free America where people can choose as they want to choose and not be forced by the government to do something they don't want to do. I think maybe the Muslims ought to get behind them because they don't want to serve pork at their soup kitchens, do they?
Now, you
oh my God.
Nuts, last year when this thing was getting started.
Oh, my God.
May 23rd, you started off with $2,500 to Rick Santorum's campaign. The very next day, you gave $1,000 to Mitt Romney's campaign. A few weeks after that, $2,500 to Tim Pawlenty. And then $2,500 to Newt Gingrich. What made you zero in on Rick Santorum? What's the most important issue that Rick Santorum champions that makes his candidacy the most important candidacy to you?
Lawrence, I think it's what we're just talking about here today, authenticity and honesty. He'll tell you exactly what you believe. He doesn't have a bunch of consultants who, hey guys, how can I say this and phrase this so I can get the women's vote? He just tells it like it is, and I think people, women admire that in him, and, well, and I think that's why he's doing so well.
I mean an issue, not so much a personal character quality, but is there a single issue that is your most important governing issue that has brought you to the center? Torum campaign.
Yes, I would say his love for America and
again,
his love for the history.
But that's not an issue. What I mean is taxation, or in this case, contraception, or abortion, or some foreign policy issue. I don't mean to cut you off, but I don't mean something general. Everybody in the campaign really likes America a lot. So I mean something specific about governing.
Well, I would say, I don't know if any one of those sticks out more than any others, but I guess the whole idea of religious liberty is important to me, and also the idea of getting the working people back to work. As you know, he's been able to win elections where there's 1 million more Democrats because he appealed to the blue-collar worker. So I would say that the jobs issue and getting people back to work, not only just because it puts food on the table, but there's a spiritual quality to having a job. It makes us feel like we're contributing, we're part of the solution, and it feels good to contribute to others. And I think so from those both sides of the spiritual aspect and the economic aspect, getting the people back to work and his idea of getting rid of the income tax on manufacturing and processors, and I think that issue probably would be a very important one. Maybe there's other ones, but I'm contraception sure ain't one of them.
Now,
I think that's not an issue.
The biggest backer of the Gingrich Super PAC has reached out to the Romney campaign and assured them that he will be with them when the time comes. Have you made similar assurances to the Romney campaign that if the Santorum star sinks, that you will jump over to the Romney campaign?
Well, my opinion all along, Lawrence, is I think Romney, Mitt, would make a terrific vice president. So
okay, all right,
too
Kathy,
early to make that conclusion, but I do say
dump it. I can't. You know, I often wonder how people like this. If you're watching MSNBC, here sits this guy, just looking stupider than a magpie. I mean, he just sits there and comes. How do people this stupid wind up with hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars? How does that happen? This guy is a dork. He's just a complete jackass. This Foster Freeze. How does he do that? And he's talking about religious liberty. That's why he likes, Santorum. Religious liberty to this crazy son of a bitch means I want the liberty to tell you, you have to believe the way I do, or I can put you in a gas chamber, or I can deny you your rights, or I can send a metal probe up your vagina whenever I feel like it. And there he said, look at him. Look at him sitting there. Can you see? Damn, I wish we were on television, Kathy. Good God. From Prairie 2, it's Thursday. This is when the new unemployment numbers come out, and they continue to edge downward. We had only 348,000 initial claims for unemployment comp for the past week. The number of newly jobless hasn't been this low since 4 years ago when the Bush collapse was really just beginning to pick up steam. At that time, this number was seen as worrisome. That's all just worrisome. Oh, how expectations have changed. We know jobs are being created, but the high number of layoffs indicates a drag on wages from large employers who continue to lay off higher paid workers because they can. Then there are the red states. Under the thrall of austerity ideology, where public sector layoffs continue to drag down employment numbers, some 750,000 government workers have been laid off in these states to fund giveaways to corporate cronies. Each of these jobs, in turn, no longer supports other jobs in the economy, also putting downward pressure on the wages of remaining workers, public and private. The big bright spot today was the announcement of all-time record profits at General Motors. While employment is way up at GM, with some plants running three shifts, a big chunk of those profits actually comes from selling Buicks in China. U.S. parts suppliers are producing a higher percentage of the content that goes into American cars, and this is adding jobs, too. The whole point of Obama's loans to the car companies was to keep these parts suppliers in business. They simply would have been wiped out if the car companies had been forced into unaided bankruptcy, where the suppliers, as the major creditors, would not have been paid. As well as the car companies coming back in Detroit, their economy is being aided by massive campaign spending on behalf of Mitt Romney. His strategy is to convince non-union blue-collar workers that the so-called bailing out of the unionized car companies was wrong. He has to convince them that there is truth in Republican mantra that lower wages for union workers will somehow magically benefit low-wage workers. A lot of blue-collar workers actually believe this nonsense. Somehow they rationalize that their piece of the pie will grow as other people sink to their level. Just the opposite is true, of course. But a guy in a suit that costs twice what they make in a month told them, "Black is white, my friends, so it must be true." Mitt is also hammering hard at Santorum's record as a Washington earmark specialist. And about his many millions made from consulting to lobbyists, after being driven from office by the voters, Santorum can point to having paid double the 14% tax rate that Romney paid. Neither one of them would actually raise taxes on the rich, of course, so the billionaires continue to pour money into their campaigns. Romney wants to cut his tax rate in half. Santorum would cut Romney's rate by a quarter. And remember the newt? He would have cut Romney's taxes to zero. To the billionaires, the amount of money they're spending, thanks to the Supreme Court, is really just chump change, like being on a horse at the track. The $11 million that Sheldon Adelson spent on the now fading Newt Gingrich amounts to 3 hours income for him. For the average U.S. worker, that would be like spending $40. Although Mr. Adelson will miss his $11 million a lot less than a $12 an hour worker will miss 3 hours pay. At $25,000 a year for 50 years, the average worker will earn $1.2 million and have about zero left at that point. If Romney wants to win Michigan, he has to convince them that is just the way it should be. PrairieNumeral2.com.
It's a special club for the privileged few, not for me. Not for you. It's a wonderful life. No stress, no strife. Never hurry, never worry like the poor folk do. And oh, it must be fun to be so wealthy, filthy, rich and young. One might wonder what great things they've done to become the fortunate ones. They're the happy members of the Lucky Sperm Club. The only thing they have to do is be conceived.
Past the hour. Now, the big story today really was what was televised. It was just something to see. I watched part of this today, and I don't know. This Darrell is such a scumsucker. the Republicans just continue to produce these monsters. And dumber than hell, ugly, mean, cynical, women-hating bastards, every single one of them. But Daryl Issa takes the cake. So three Democrats walked out of this House Oversight and Government Reform hearing. That's the one that, what's his name, used to chair when the Democrats were in charge. drawing a complete blank again. God, I hate early Alzheimer's. But he held the House Oversight and Government Reform hearing on religious liberty and the birth control rule on to protest. They walked out to protest Issa's refusal to allow progressive women to testify in favor of the Obama administration's contraception rule. This is how Nazis operate. And that's what every one of these pasty-faced sons of bitches are. Nazis. The morning panel at the hearing consisted exclusively of men from conservative religious organizations. And if you've seen that picture, there they sit, starting from the right, looking at them. There's a man in a coat and tie, must be a minister. Next to him is somebody with a yarmulke, must be, if not a rabbi, some kind of a religious a Jew. Next to him is a Catholic priest. Oh, God, forgot his boy, I guess. I don't see his boy with him, no. Next to him is another Catholic priest. He's missing his boy, too. And then on the far left is some white dude in a, I don't know, what is that, a suit? God only knows what religious Nazi organization he represents. But there they are. There they are. There they sit. There they sit. Representative Carolyn Maloney, Democrat of New York. Before she walked out of the hearing, she said to Issa, what I want to know is where are the women? I look at this panel. I don't see one single individual representing the tens of millions of women across the country who want and need insurance coverage for basic preventive health care services, including family planning. Where are the women? Eleanor Holmes Norton, who's a delegate, not a representative. From the District of Columbia, they're not allowed to have a, they're not allowed to have representation. They're not allowed to have a senator. They're not allowed to vote. She told reporters in the hallway outside the hearing that she walked out because it was being conducted like a, quote, autocratic regime, end quote. The other member who left, including Maloney and Eleanor Holmes Norton, was Representative Mike, oh, thank you, Quigley, a Democrat of Illinois. There are 10 witnesses testifying at today's hearing. None of those individuals is in favor of the Obama administration's birth control rule. This Daryl Issa, what, oh, man. Democrats say they tried to invite another witness, a young woman, to testify, but they were blocked by the Republicans. Oh, gee, there's a surprise. Issa said at the hearing that he rejected the Democrats' witness, a female witness, Sandra Fluke, because as a Georgetown University law student who, these are Issa's words, appears to have become energized over this issue. Those are his words. Because of that, she was, quote, not appropriate or qualified. He said that in lieu of allowing her to speak at the hearing, he told his staff to post a video online of Fluke speaking at a previous press conference. Oh, my God. Fluke, by the way, this young woman has been a vocal supporter of the Obama administration's decision not to exempt religiously affiliated employers from having to offer contraception without a copay to their employees under their health insurance. After walking out of the hearing Thursday, Eleanor Holmes Norton pulled Ms. Fluke into the hallway to allow her to speak to reporters. Fluke began to cry as she told the story of her 32-year-old friend who was diagnosed with ovarian cysts and prescribed birth control pills as the only remedy for her condition that could save her from becoming infertile. Because her student insurance did not cover contraception, Fluke's friend could not afford her medication. And she eventually lost her ovary and began experiencing symptoms of early menopause. Ms. Fluke said, quote, these are the consequences of this policy, and those are the voices the chairman silenced today, end quote. We'll be right back.
Mike Malloy.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do. Man, I just, I'll tell you, it does get a bit exhausting. You know what I'm saying? Trying to report on this crap. A little bit of good news today. I guess you can call it good news, huh? If you like cars and Detroit and people earning a paycheck back in the Motor City. General Motors made a record profit last year, $7.6 billion. And $7.2 billion of that was from North America. So as a result of that, that guarantees its highest profit-sharing payment of $7,000 each to the typical U.S. worker. $7,000 bonus. The typical Ford employee is eligible for a $6,200 bonus based on the $6.2 billion in profit that that company made in North America in 2011. Chrysler workers are eligible for $1,500 bonus. They had an operating profit of $1.97 billion, and about 85% was derived from North America. Of course, Chrysler makes such a crappy-ass product, I don't see how they get any sales at all. But anyway, that no matter how you look at that, unless you want to get all green and talk about... Although, I have to say, the auto industry seems to be trying. Or am I wrong? Our two vehicles... we have a minivan. How old is that? 7 years? It's in the seventh year now. And I have a Ford pickup that's 8 years old. I think it's 8 years old. Jesus God. On the minivan, we have 112,000 miles on it. And my pickup has about 40,000. That's a real jewel, I'll tell you. It's a Ford, Ranger. But I hate Chrysler products now. What the hell am I talking about? The only thing I wanted to mention was the fact that GM and Ford made enough money so that the workers will get an average at GM of $7,000 bonus and the workers at Ford $6,100. So that has got to be a good thing. According to Reuters news agency, Iran has told world powers, mostly European, that it wants to resume long-stalled talks quickly with what they call new initiatives in hand. And the government of France said the government of Iran may now be open to addressing concerns about its nuclear quest. Now, apparently, this offer was made in a letter to the European Union's foreign policy chief. And it was obtained by Reuters today. Now, this is the day after Iran made a pretty big deal about several advances in nuclear know-how and sent oil prices upward with suggestions of economic retaliation in what may have been moves to boost its leverage before any fresh negotiations. I mean, you know, everybody in Israel, in the Likudnik party, I'm not talking about everybody in Israel, I don't mean that at all. I mean everybody, every single body in the Likud party, though, and all the AIPAC-sponsored American Jews are all very pissed off, as are America's fundamental Christians. They're all pissed off. What? No war? We're not going to have war? You know, the Israelis see it as their survival, and the Christians see it as their salvation. Oh, yeah. You know, a war in the Middle East? In the land between the rivers? Oh, Persia? Or was that Baghdad? Just remember, Christian fundamentalists, they're chomping at the bit for this war because they're hoping that this time, damn, after that Israeli-Lebanon thing a couple of years ago, remember that? Where all the Christian-ready websites, the women were getting their hair done and their legs shaved and their fingernails polished so that when they met Jesus on the way up to heaven in the rapture, they could be presentable. Isn't that your typical fundamentalist woman's attitude, though? Isn't it, huh? I'm going to get my nails done. Why? Oh, I'm going to meet Jesus. Really? And he's going to take a look at your nails. Oh, yeah, he loves my nails. Sick, 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 sick! So, Iran's president vowed no retreat on its nuclear path, but they want to talk. Iran's chief negotiator, Saeed Jalil, said he would have, quote, new initiatives, end quote, but did not spell them out. He made one separate reference to Iran's nuclear issue without spelling out whether Tehran was prepared to negotiate on that. But France's foreign minister, Alain Juppé, said that while the letter was ambiguous, it seemed to signal, quote, the start of opening up, an opening up from Iran, end quote, with respect to discussing its nuclear activity. We certainly have our bloomers in a wad about Iran's nuclear activity, don't we? Huh? Why don't we get our bloomers in a wad about China's nuclear activity? China is the country that eventually is going to devour the United States. I just can't see Iran devouring the United States. Oh, it's not devouring the United States that is the reason we have our bloomers in a wad? It's something to do with Israel? Well, the Israelis have 200 nuclear bombs, or maybe 400, maybe 600. So why doesn't Israel, I mean, just on its own, Israel's tried to play it real cute for the past 30 years, 40 years, never announcing one way or the other. Do we have them? Do we not have them? Wouldn't you like to know? Do we have them? Do we not have them? If you feel froggy, jump. Why doesn't Israel stop with the goddamn games and just say to the world, all right, here's the deal. We have 600 nuclear bombs, and we will use them. I mean, that's the only reason for developing nuclear weapons, right? So you can threaten your enemies, real and pretend, just threaten everybody, you know, we'll use them! What's with the ambiguity here? I mean, the whole world knows Israel has hundreds of nuclear warheads, perfectly able to deliver them to Denver, Stockholm, to Iran, Beijing, Ramallah. It doesn't make any difference. I mean, come on. So if Israel is so frightened of the nuclear program, and I don't think the Israelis are. This is a blood feud between Netanyahu and Ahmadinejad. Why doesn't the government of Israel just come right out and say, okay, we have 400, 500, 600, 823, 312, whatever the number is, and say, look, you know, fun is fun, a game's a game. We're going to continue to torture the Palestinians. We're going to continue to build on their territory. We're going to continue to uproot their tacky little olive groves. We're going to continue to build illegal, by our law, illegal settlements on their land. We're just going to keep doing this. Now, if you want to stop us or you want to get nasty with us, you think you're going to push us into the Mediterranean, bring it, mofo, bring it. Just understand something, Iran. We have nuclear bombs. We will turn your whole country into glass. So smarten up. Let's sit down and talk. Oh, my God. Now, interesting, I don't know if you know this, but Iran is a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Guess who isn't? You're way ahead of me. So, there are factions in this country and in Israel and probably in Iran also who tonight are just kind of wringing their hands and saying, oh, damn, there's not going to be a war? Oh, please. You promised us a war. And maybe, you know, a lot of people involved in that part of the world think that Ahmadinejad is crazy. You know, he's crazy because he has a real thing about Israel. He's just over the top about Israel. But they don't consider that Netanyahu is just as crazy. And when you have two people like Ahmadinejad and Netanyahu are going to try to out-crazy each other, dear God in heaven, do you understand? This is like this crazy bastard that's backing Rick Santorum, this Frupert Freezer or whatever the hell his name is, and Edelman, the one that's, or Adelson or whatever his name is, backing Newt. You know, all these billionaires and warmongers and crazy people like Netanyahu and Ahmadinejad. I don't know that Ahmadinejad, he seems crazy. I don't know. I know Netanyahu is. And by the way, whatever happened to what's his name? The big guy who, Sharon. Is he still dead or is he not dead yet? I don't think he is he? He's still attached to machines. How long has that been? Oh my God. Years. We'll be right back.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Mike is in Atlanta, listening on Sirius. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I like your bumper music, by the way. I haven't heard you play Pink Floyd for a while.
We play some of it, but
you got good taste.
Oh, thanks.
I had a question, though. I wanted to get your opinion, and if you will give me the chance, just to respond to your opinion. But talking about Obama and Bush as presidents, I know I've heard you say a lot of times that Bush is a war criminal, and for a number of reasons, but specifically I've heard you talk about waterboarding a lot of times, and because of that, he is a war criminal.
Well, no, wait. That is a war crime. But what make Bush,
okay,
what made Bush and his whole administration war criminals was a definition laid out by the United States at the Nuremberg war crimes trials in Germany in 1946 and 1947. And it was decided that the worst crime that a country can commit, worst because it contains within it all the other crimes, is to invade without provocation another country. Bush and his administration invaded Iraq for no reason whatsoever. It was based on lies. So on that basis, George W. Bush qualifies as much of a war criminal as Adolf Hitler or Joe Stalin or Mao Zedong or Pol Pot. He is a war criminal, Bush, and he should be tried in an international tribunal and either find him guilty or innocent.
Okay. Fair enough. That's getting on to a different path than what my question was, but my question would be specifically about Obama. Do you consider him a war criminal because of the fact of when the predator drone strikes have been stepped up dramatically in the last 3 years, and when there is a predator strike, granted, it probably certainly does kill terrorists a lot of the time, but anytime it hits a house or a hut with terrorists in there, the servants that are in there with them, the kids that are in there with them, the wives, the relatives, they get blown up just the same way that the terrorists do. And the kid that is a kid, would that constitute a war crime as well? And should Obama be tried based on the fact that that occurs on a pretty regular basis under his administration and with his authority?
Absolutely.
Okay. At least you're consistent. I'll give you that. I mean,
Obama has done several things since he has become president that, not by my definition, but by definition laid out in the Geneva Conventions, laid out at the end of the Nuremberg trials, Obama has committed acts that qualify as war crimes by definition. Now, is it equivalent? I don't know to what Bush did. I don't know that equivalency is an issue. A war crime, you know, someone who kills one person or someone who kills 100 person. Obviously, if they're killed, if these people are brought to trial, the person who killed 100 is going to have a much greater chance in most states in this country being executed than the person who killed one, for the obvious reasons. One person you can murder in a fit of passion. That's why we have degrees of the charge of murder, everything from manslaughter up to murder one. But if you kill 100 people, if you systematically murder people, then your chances of pleading anything other than insanity are practically zip. So is there equivalency between what Bush did and what Obama did? On a pure raw numbers basis, no. But in the purest sense, I think that Obama has committed war crimes, yes.
So you think then he should be tried is what I'm
in a just world. Yeah, in a just world, we would have put people on trial. We would have sent them to The Hague for trial. Our own people, going all the way back to Henry Kissinger, if you wanted to go back to Richard Nixon, the bombing of Cambodia. I mean, there are examples after example after example. It doesn't start with Bush, and it damn sure is not going to end with Obama.
I agree with that, but as far as, and I do give you credit for being consistent, I got to respect that, but as far as what you mentioned about Iraq, and you can certainly make an argument that it was the wrong thing to do, but you have to, when you say it's based on lies, do you accept that a lie is something that you know to be untrue whenever you say it? Because you could take the quotes that Bill Clinton had about Iraq having WMDs, Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, you could take quotes that they all said the exact same things. You could write down their quotes, put them in a bag, pick a quote out, and you couldn't pick out what Bush said.
But you're leaving out
based off what.
All right, but
and
no,
you're
wait,
also
wait,
leaving
wait,
out
wait,
the fact
wait,
that Congress
wait. Mike, I said wait. You got to respect that because I'm almost out of time here. It doesn't make any difference what Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton or John Kerry said. They were not the president of the United States. They were not the head of the CIA. They were not the head of the War Department. They were at the time, Hillary might have been a senator. I don't know what the hell Kerry was. But the decision to invade was made by George W. Bush. As he said, I'm the decider. It was his decision. So any tangential opinions that any politician had, or you had, or I had, or my great aunt had, is immaterial. It's the decision made by George W. Bush.
And I just want to add to that, it was George W. Bush's decision as the decider to have Colin Powell give trumped up evidence to the UN Security Council, which convinced them to invade Iraq.
Right, right. So there was a conspiracy of lies to invade Iraq. I got to leave there, Mike. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate your call. All right, what do we got coming up here? Let me see. Oh, yeah, you're going to love this one. A Colorado high school student dropped out of his choir because he had to sing a song that had in it a line praising Allah. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. There's a section of the paper that's called, most papers called Addendum and Errata, you know, where they go back and correct all the mistakes they made in the previous issue. In my Addendum and Errata for today, Khalil Gibran was the name I was trying to think about last night, the Persian poet, only he's not Persian. As Roz in Canada pointed out, he's Lebanese, and as Michael in Roswell pointed out, Gibran was a Maronite Catholic, and virtually all of his later writings were originally in English, and that's because his English was better than his Arabic, because he spent most of his life in Boston. Gibran's particular brand of mysticism, according to Michael, was greatly influenced by Abdul Baha, the founder of the Baha'i faith. So there you go. Thanks to Michael and Roz for doing the research for me. Well, I thought he was Persian. I just know that I liked his poetry. Still do, as a matter of fact. I'm sure you've seen it or heard it by now. Maxine Waters. Democrat from California. She was at the Democratic State Party Convention in San Diego last weekend. And there's a video out there. It shows her rallying Democrats to win back control of the U.S. House in November, which I think they will do. But she's standing up at the podium. I love this woman. I swear to God, I love Maxine Waters. She's standing at the podium and she said, quote, I saw pictures of Boehner, she called him. I saw pictures of Boehner and Cantor on our screens here at the convention. Don't ever let me see that again in life. Those Republicans in our hall, on our screens, talking about anything. These are demons. They're bringing down this country, destroying this country, because they'd rather do whatever they can to destroy this president rather than for the good of this country, end quote. Yeah, abso-damn-lutely, Maxine. You go, girl, completely. Now, of course, the swine, the demons, especially this punk-ass Eric Cantor, I mean, really, wouldn't you like to take this boy out and back and just wash his mouth out with a big cake of lava soap? Wouldn't you? I mean, I just can't stand these liars. This is what he said. This is a sad and unfortunate speech from a senior House Democrat, particularly at a time when we should be trying to find common ground on ways to get Americans back to work. Oh, please. Common ground? From Republicans? Oh, get real. Anyway, Waters went on. She also boasted that banks will be, quote, shaking in their boots, end quote, if Democrats take back the House. And she becomes the House Financial Services Committee chairwoman. Oh, please, if for no other reason, I hope the Democrats get control of the U.S. House. Maxine Waters will kick ass. Oh, my God, she will kick ass. She currently is the second ranking Democrat on the committee behind Barney Frank, who isn't running for re-election this year. So if the Democrats get control, she will run the House Financial Services Committee. Woo! Oh, yeah, yeah. Waters continues to face an ethics investigation, into her potential role in securing federal money for a bank with ties to her husband. And last year, remember, she was addressing a partisan crowd, and she said, as far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell. You got to love this woman. Ethics, is it ethics investigation? Ethics investigation. Okay, well, Maxine, I hope everything is cool. I hope you didn't break any laws. But if you did, watch out now. Watch out now, all right? Watch out. What else we got here? Oh, all the talk by the right-wingers about they're going to undo what they call Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act. And it's just horrible. It's terrible. It's awful. Forcing people, especially the individual mandate, you know, making people buy health insurance. Oh, my God, how horrible. Of course, there's not a state in the union, I don't think, where you're not required to buy car insurance. They insist that you have insurance on your automobile. Or to protect the other driver, but as far as your own health, oh, no, don't go there. Oh, no, 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 can't do that. Well, hog snot. The reason they don't want it is because it comes from the president. It comes from the Democrats. Let me clue you in on something. This was in the Times the other day, and I think most of you already know this. The that provision in Obama's, the Democrats' health care law requiring all Americans to buy health insurance, that has its roots in conservative thinking. That's the only reason Romney has it in Massachusetts. The idea that people should be required to buy health insurance was put together more than 20 years ago by a number of conservative economists. And the idea was embraced by scholars at conservative research groups, including the Heritage Foundation, that group of right-wing monsters. The American Enterprise Institute, there's another one. And for a while, Republicans in the Senate were in favor of all this. This is 20 years ago. What was happening 20 years ago? Boom, 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 boom. That's right. What the Republicans labeled Hillary Care. Remember Hillary Care? Ah? Back in 1993, Newt Gingrich, this horrible human being, said at a debate in December that, quote, in 1993, in fighting, quote, Hillary Care, virtually every conservative saw the mandate as a less dangerous future than what Hillary was trying to do, end quote. What was Hillary trying to do? Does anybody remember so-called Hillary Care? Does anybody? Well, at the time, in order not to support a Democratic idea coming out of the White House, all the conservatives, all the neo-fascists, all the Nazis who are waiting in the wings to take over the government, they said, no, 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 no. What we should have is a requirement that everybody buys health insurance for themselves, for their family. Yeah. Stuart Butler, a fellow at the Heritage Foundation, said in a lecture back then on how to ensure affordable health care for all Americans, here's what he said, quote, if a young man wrecks his Porsche and has has not had the foresight to obtain insurance, we may commiserate. But society feels no obligation to repair his car. But health care is different. If a man is struck down by a heart attack on the street, Americans will care for him whether or not he has insurance. End quote. Well, ergo, the solution? Mandate all households to obtain adequate health insurance. How simple is this? I like the part of a young man wrecks his Porsche. Jesus Christ, these people live in a different world. Now, back then, Democrats were leery of the idea. See, when Clinton put forward the outlines of his health care proposal in a speech to the National Governors Association in Tulsa, Oklahoma, back in 1993, he called for requiring employers to buy coverage for their workers. And in order to fight Clinton's proposal back then, a large group of Republican senators, including Bob Dole, who was the minority leader at the time, and several who are still in office, proposed a bill that would have required individuals and not employers to buy insurance. What? Really? Oh, my God. I didn't know that. Did you know that, Truth Seeker? I haven't heard any of our astute commentators on television point that out. This comes from Michael Cooper, blogging at the New York Times. But there it is. In black and white, they were in favor of it then. Now, Mitt Romney, who put RomneyCare, let's go ahead and use the shorthand, into effect in Massachusetts. How he weasels. I hope Romney just continues to get about 30% of the vote and never goes anywhere. What a scum sucker this guy is. But so-called RomneyCare came from the Heritage Foundation, the American Enterprise Institute, and the Affordable Health Care Act put together by Obama came from the same place. But I'm not crazy, I'm just a little unwell. I know right now you can't tell. But stay a while and maybe then you'll see a different side of me. I'm not crazy, I'm just a little impaired. I know right now you don't care. But what's the good of scheming?
He's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So the whole idea of the mandate, individual mandate, in the Affordable Health Care Act put out there by the Obama administration a couple of years ago, and that has just ripped the country to pieces. I mean, the way the Republicans present the Affordable Health Care Act is socialism, communism, Nazism, I don't know, pick an ism. They make it sound as though somebody has broken into the United States and is holding a knife at the throat of every four-year-old and just saying, if you pass this, you're going to die. Yeah, but we already passed it. Well, then we have to unpass it. How many of these swine, these Republicans, said, on my first day in office, I'll repeal Obamacare? Really? You know, especially when Romney says that, when RomneyCare is exactly the same thing. I mean, this is the thing, folks. You know, say what you like about Obama. I certainly do. He is what he is, but I'll tell you what, you know, that old saw about the lesser of two evils, it certainly applies this time, doesn't it? But that's up to you. I mean, if you want to vote for the lesser of two evils, go ahead. I'm just saying the hypocrisy of these bastards. Now, Obama resisted as a candidate the idea of an individual mandate. If you remember, he wanted a mandate for children only, have all children insured. Once he was elected, he changed his mind. And when he changed his mind, the conservatives flopped their dead minds over too. They changed theirs too. Yeah. Oh, you're going to support it? Then I'm against it.
We don't like people in the White House. It's not the Black House. It's the White House. We don't like people in the White House who aren't
Caucasoid.
Remember what our job is, to make sure you're a one-term president. If you come out in favor of moms, we'll say moms are devils.
This is what they've done.
So, Romney, especially, what a slimy bastard he is, isn't he? And you know his hair is just full of wild root cream oil.
You know it is. What? Wild root cream oil? Do you remember that? Anybody remember that stuff? Kathy's shaking her head. That's before you were born, honey. A long time ago. Wild root cream oil for your hair. Ooh, my uncle Victorio used to put that in his hair before he'd go out and try to impress the girls on a Saturday night. Anyway, Romney, despite what he signed into law in Massachusetts, has made a pledge that he's going to repeal Obamacare, what he calls Obamacare. And that's the central idea to his presidential campaign, not how he's going to avoid a deadly, death-filled adventurism with Israel and Iran and Syria and Afghanistan and the United States. No, 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 no. Not how he's going to try to honestly, truthfully, other than pay lip service, get the country back to work. No, 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 no. This is the scum sucker who said, let the auto industry die. This from a guy whose father had been the head of American Motors. Oh, well. So Romney can kiss America's ass as far as I'm concerned. Romney, go away. But in the meantime, keep doing what you're doing. Keep playing this game with these other sickoid candidates in the Republican side. Oh, who's up this time? Michelle Bachmann. Oh, who's up this time? Oh, Ron Paul. Oh, who's up this time? Newt Gingrich. Oh, who's up this time? Rick Santorum. Woo-hoo, woo-hoo. Keep going. Keep it up. Keep doing it. And keep talking about birth control. Every time these right-wingers talk about birth control, there are 100 million women in this country who go, So keep talking about it, you chumps. Keep talking about it. Heritage Foundation, the guy quoted, Butler, the one who originally advocated from the Heritage Foundation individual mandates, he said in an interview that his views have evolved over the years. He says he now believes near universal coverage could be achieved without a mandate. The other right-wing think tanks are trying to distance themselves from something that they advocated strongly back in the early 90s when Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton were trying to get some kind of universal health care out there for everybody in the country. But if the Democrats should ever wake up and smell the coffee and just come up with a single payer and then put it out to the American people by just saying to the American people, if you want single payer, let your member of Congress know. And then just get the hell out of the way, because there would be a stampede of people to the polls to say yes, hell yes, double hell yes.
Come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Promises are snapped in two. 25 before the hour. Don't you just hate these hypocritical bastards? I mean, seriously, it's one thing to have political differences. Too bad there is so much duplicity and hypocrisy and lies and cheating and sneaking and self-promotion in our political system. It is. It really is. It could be a fairly good system, I guess, although the framers of the Constitution warned against the political party system. Didn't they? Huh? Sure they did. Did you see this? A Colorado high school student, James Harper, a senior at Grand Junction High School in Grand Junction, Colorado, is letting the world know that he quit the high school choir after he was given a choice to sing or not to sing a song, an Islamic folk song that had the lyric, quote, "There is no truth except Allah." It was a song written by the Indian composer A.R. Rahman. And this young man put his objection in an email to the Mesa County School District 51. When the school stood by the choir director, Marsha Whelan, and her selection, the young man said he quit. He said to a local television station, quote, "I don't want to come across as a bigot or a racist, but I really don't feel it is appropriate for students in a public high school to be singing an Islamic worship song." He went on, "This is worshiping another god and even worshiping another prophet. I think there would be a lot of outrage if we made a Muslim choir say Jesus Christ is the only truth," end quote. You know, you have to agree with this young man, right? If he's being honest. Absolutely. To honor any religion, to honor any of those religions' avatars or prophets in a public school is stupid. But there's a little bit more to the story. A district spokesman for the school defended the decision to include the song. This is what the district spokesman said. Quote, "Choral music or chorale music is often devoted to religious themes. This is not a case where the school is endorsing or promoting any particular religion or other non-educational agenda. The song was chosen because its rhythms and other qualities would provide an opportunity to exhibit the musical talent and skills of the group in competition, not because of its religious message or lyrics." He noted that the choir is, quote, "a voluntary after-school activity," end quote. He continued by saying, quote, "Students are not required to participate and receive no academic credit for doing so," end quote. Now, at an upcoming concert, the choir is scheduled to sing an Irish folk song and a Christian song entitled "Prayer of the Children," in addition to the song by the Indian composer A.R. Rahman, the one that is in dispute. The high school student, or no, not the high school student, but the district spokesman said, quote, "The teacher consulted with students and asked each of them to review an online performance of the selection with their parents before making the decision to perform the piece. And members who object to the religious content of musical selections would not be required to sing them." Sounds like there's something else going on here, right? Now, just as a point of reference here, A.R. Rahman, who has sold hundreds of millions of records and is well known in India, said his song is not intended for a worship ceremony. He said in a written statement that the song, composed for the movie Bose, the Forgotten Hero, is about, quote, "self-healing and spirituality," end quote. Rahman went on to say, quote, "It is unfortunate that the student in Colorado misinterpreted the intention of the song. I have long celebrated the commonalities of humanity and tried to share and receive things in this way. While I respect his decision for opting out, this incident is an example of why we need further cultural education through music," end quote.
Now, the song is written in Urdu, but one verse translates this way, quote, "There is no truth except Allah," end quote. And there's another line that says, quote, "Allah is the only eternal and immortal," end quote. Now, although the choir sang the original version, the music teacher, Marsha Whelan, distributed translated lyrics. So, the song was sung in phonetic Urdu. And the only one, other than the choir master, the chorale, the singing leader, this teacher, Miss Weiland, the only one other than her who would know the translation would be, obviously, someone who spoke Urdu or someone who read the translation sheet that she so graciously provided to the students and their parents. After asking these little buggers, "Do you have an objection to singing this?" And nobody objected. Until young Master Harper objected after the fact. Now, I don't think... Let me back up. I don't see anything wrong with religiously inspired music or religiously inspired art. Oh, my God, we wouldn't have a Renaissance in Europe in painting without religious inspiration to the artwork. Some of the greatest symphonic music has been written around the Messiah, to name one. You don't have to believe this stuff in order to appreciate the musicality of it or the artistic quality of it. You just don't. You can listen to it and go, wow, yeah, that's a pretty good chord progression there, or whatever you want to, you know, however you want to do it. So, methinks there was an ulterior motive of young Master Harper, the senior at Grand Junction High School, in his objection to singing Zikr, Z-I-K-R, Zikr, a song written by A.R. Rahman. Now, his statement, remember his statement that he sent to everybody in the school district, quote, "I don't want to come across as a bigot or a racist, but I really don't feel it is appropriate for students in a public high school to be singing an Islamic worship song." Okay, when you first read that, you go, yeah, you know, you're right. But this was an after-school event. This was a voluntary event. This was an event about music and rhythms and patterns in sound and vocality and musicality. This, in other words, was an attempt at cross-cultural exposure. It was not an attempt to convert young Master Harper to the Muslim faith. I have no idea what religion young Master Harper is, but I would be willing to wager, oh, I don't know, lots and lots of acorns that he is a Christian. And therefore, the phrase about Allah being the only truth really got stuck in his craw. Now, this is where atheism liberates you. I, he said, being an atheist, I can sing any song. I can sing Onward Christian Soldiers. I can sing, if I understood the lyrics, a song in Urdu about Allah. I can sing Hava Nagila. I can, you know, and I can appreciate the musicality, the tonal qualities, the chord progressions, all that stuff about music without thinking to myself, oh my God, my brain is being saturated with fill in the blank religion. Why is this so difficult? So, young Master Harper, the senior at Grand Junction High School, shall have his way. He shall not be required to sing anything, ever. He wasn't required in this instance. He also will not, you know, have his moment after it's over. I'm sure the religious right, the Christian religious right, is going to seize upon this young man, hoist him on their shoulders, and parade him through the blogosphere as being a great defender of what? Of what? Well, the story will have a chapter 2, 3, 7, 20. Watch. And let's see what it was, truly, that Master James Harper, a senior at Grand Junction High School in Grand Junction, Colorado, was truly
objecting to. And again, I will bet you a double order of acorns that he is not a free-thinking atheist, or even, if you want to hedge a little bit, an agnostic, who just objects to the whole idea of singing religious songs, even though it was not a requirement, it was not a part of the curriculum, it was nothing. It was a choral director trying to educate her students, her musical students. Oh, hell, never mind.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. I don't know. Those stories really, really get under my skin. They really do. There is definitely a difference between promoting a certain religious belief system in a public school, which the Christians are always trying to do. I never hear, maybe I'm missing it, but I never hear the Jews or the Muslims trying to promote their religious beliefs in a public school system. Do you? I never hear the Hindus trying it. Or any other religion. There are, you know, a bunches of religions. The only ones I ever hear doing it, making the effort, and trying to demonize people who resist, are the fundamentalist Christians. Why is that? I mean, once again, do you have such a lack of faith in your faith? Are you so weak in the knees about your religious beliefs that you want to pound it into people? You want it in front of their faces every second that they're conscious, awake? Come on. For heaven's sake, so to speak. Stop it. Just stop it. He said plaintively, just stop it. Please. I wish I would have been old enough. I remember when I went back to school after summer vacation. When was it? 55, 56? Somewhere back in the 50s, I think. 54, 5, 6, somewhere around there. And this is back in the day where every morning when I was in elementary school, when you got to class, the teacher might be there, the teacher might not be there. If she, and for the most part it was a she, if she wasn't there when you got to class, you know, you'd raise hell and giggle ass with your friends and jump around and fight and stuff. And then when the teacher walked in, dead silence. And there were no PA systems that we had back then. I used to walk 100 miles through snow to get... No, it wasn't that bad. Hell, it was only a block and a half from my... It was a neighborhood school. But then we would all stand by our desks on a given signal from the teacher. We'd all stand. We'd turn toward the upper, the front of the class. In the left-hand corner was the American flag. And we would all say the Pledge of Allegiance. And then we would all bow our heads and close our eyes and have a little quick Christian, although non-denominational, prayer. Which I always thought was kind of interesting since I had a couple of Jewish teachers when I was in elementary school. But that's a whole different story. Well, I came back from summer vacation one year, and all of a sudden, the Pledge of Allegiance had changed. And we all had a copy on our desks that we could look at. One nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, was now one nation under God. Woo! Oh my, uh-oh, what's this? Now, I have to tell you, it was very embarrassing back in the day. Very embarrassing to talk about God or Jesus or, and nobody talked about Muhammad or Moses or, you know, it was always about God and Jesus. And it was very embarrassing to me because I always thought religion was kind of like going to the bathroom. You know, you should do it in private. You know, you just do it in private. It's so personal. And I can remember, once again, being influenced by my grandmother who said, it says in the Bible that when you want to pray, go into your closet and shut the door and no public prayer. Don't make a spectacle of yourself. Don't call attention to yourself. So to stand there in a public classroom and recite a prayer to me was like, uh-oh. It says in the Bible not to do it. But who was I to challenge my betters, you know, the adults? But it's a shame, isn't it, that the religionists of the Christian faith, whether they're Catholic or Protestant, have just beaten and hammered this country, just kicked this country bloody with their religious beliefs and their insistence on this and their insistence on that. Do it this way. How dare you? And then to sit back on their haunches and bay and howl at the moon that there's an attack on religion, when in fact religion is attacking anything that gets in its path. And it's fundamental Christianity that's doing the attacking. I don't see Jews marching down the street saying, put Moses in the classroom. I don't see Muslims demanding Muhammad must be talked about in school. I don't see that. Do you? Am I wrong here? And the only reason I rail about this stuff is because the political system has become permeated with this religious nonsense. You can't get away from it. You have a whole cadre of candidates who stand there and project their bloody Christianity onto everyone else. That's why I talk about it. Because that wall of separation between church and state is being eaten by termites. It's being removed. And these right-wing Christian fascists who talk about, well, we're going to pass laws that the state of X will never allow Sharia law in our state. No, no, no. What they really are saying is this is just the first step. We eliminate the possibility of Sharia law. And what about Mosaic law? That too. But we want Christian law. But Christian law is Mosaic law. Oh. I just get so sick of it. I just get so damned sick of it. Don't you? Don't you? Listen, Christians, do what your avatar, do what your Son of God told you to do. Pray in private. Quit taking your God's name in vain, which is what you do all the time. Shame on you. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.